ஸ்ரீகுருப்யோ நமஹ. ஹரி ஓம். ஓம் ஸ்ரீ மகாகணபதயே நமஹ. ஓம் கணானாம் த்வா கணபதிகும் ஹவாமஹே கவிம் கவீனாமுபமஸ்ரவஸ்தமம் ஜேஷ்டராஜம் ப்ரஹ்மணாம் ப்ரஹ்மணஸ்பத ஆனஶ்ருண்வன்னோதிபிஃ சீத ஸாதனம். ஓம் ஸ்ரீ மகாகணபதயே நமஹ. ஓம் சதாசிவசமாரம்பாம் வியாசசங்கரமத்யமாம் அஸ்மதாச்சாரியபர்யந்தாம் வந்தே குரு பரம்பராம். ஸ்ருதிஸ்மிருதிபுராணானாம் ஆலயம் கருணாலயம் நமாமி பகவத்பாதசங்கரம் லோகசங்கரம் சங்கரம் சங்கராச்சாரியம் கேசவம் பாதராயணம் சூத்ரபாஷ்யகிருதௌ வந்தே பகவந்தௌ புனப்புனஃ. ஓம் ஈஸ்வரோ குருராத்மேதி மூர்த்திபேதவிபாகினே வ்யோமவத்வ்யாப்ததேஹாய தக்ஷிணாமூர்த்தயே நமஃ. ஓம் சகனாவவது சகனௌ புனக்து சகவீர்யங்கரவாவஹை தேஜஸ்வினாவதீதமஸ்து மா வித்விஷாவஹை. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்திஹி. ஓம் பத்ரம் கண்ணேபிஃ ஸ்ருணுயாம தேவாஃ பத்ரம் பஶ்யேமாக்ஷபர்யஜத்ராஃ ஸ்திரைரங்கைஸ்துஷ்டு வாகம்ஸஸ்தனூபிஃ வ்யஷேம தேவஹிதை யதாயுஃ. ஸ்வஸ்தி ந இந்திரோ வ்ருத்தஶ்ரவாஃ ஸ்வஸ்தி நஃ பூஷா விஶ்வவேதாஃ ஸ்வஸ்தி நஸ்தார்க்ஷ்யோ அரிஷ்டநேமிஃ ஸ்வஸ்தி நோ ப்ருஹஸ்பதிர் ததாது. ஓம் ஶாந்தி ஶாந்தி ஶாந்திஃ. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே ஸ்ரீ தட்சிணாமூர்த்தி ஸ்வரூபாய ஸ்ரீ தயானந்த ரூபாய பரமாத்மனே பரபிரம்மனே. Salutations to all Mahatmas. Swamiji, Namaskaram Swamiji. Namaskaram to Swamiji. Mandukya Upanishad of Atharva Veda, consisting of 12 mantras, has the elaboration of subject matter in the form of 215 karikas of Gaudapada Acharya. Adishankar Bhagavatpada wrote commentaries on all the Upanishads, as per we know very well, 10 major Upanishads. But when he wrote commentary on this Mandukya Upanishad, he did not think that he should write a commentary on the Mandukya Upanishad, because this is the one Upanishad, only Upanishad, which already had some elaborate discussion, explanation in him of karikas of Gaudapada Acharya. Gaudapada Acharya happened to be Adishankara Bhagavatpada's guru's guru, guru of Govindapada Acharya. The great reverence for Acharya, Gaudapada Acharya, Shankara Bhagavatpada did not write his commentary on the Upanishads. But what he did, he considered the Upanishad or 12 mantras and the 215 karikas of Gaudapada Acharya together as one big text. And he called it a Mandukya Prakaranam. Bhashyam is commentary, isn't it? But he considered the book itself as Mandukya Prakaranam. Mandukya Upanishad, when you say, there are 12 mantras. Mandukya Prakarana Granthaha, when you say, 12 mantras along with 215 karikas. So he wrote commentary on all these karikas, and Adishankara Bhagavatpada's commentary on karikas itself became an indirect commentary on Upanishads also. Should we consider a textbook of karikas as a commentary on Upanishads? Or is it considered as a commentary? In the tradition, Gaudapada Acharyas do not see it as a commentary. They only see it as an elaboration of the same subject matter of the Upanishads. We can say it's a commentary. An Acharya, Shankara Bhagavatpada, sees it as a prakaranam, prakarana granthaha. The book of karikas is looked upon as a prakarana granthaha. Prakarana granthaha is a Vedantic manual, a Vedantic treatise. No Prakarana Grantaha is an original text of Vedanta Shastram. It is not a Shruti. So Prakarana Grantha, there are so many Prakarana Granthas, you might have read many. And Prakarana Granthas actually discuss a specific aspect of the Vedanta Shastram, Upanishadti. Upanishad, all Upanishads, Vedanta Shastram as a whole, we can say discuss many, many aspects. So many aspects are discussed in the Upanishad Shastram. Means ultimately, the aim of any Upanishad is to help us discover the truth, obtaining as one's own self. Simply talking about the truth will be of no use. Truth is of this nature. Truth is this great. Truth is this. How much are you understand the greatness of the reality and the truth will not be of any use. Discovering the truth as our own Swarup alone will help us, will be of tremendous benefit. Why? Because discovering the truth as our own self, the fundamental problem can be resolved. Unless and until you discover the truth being yourself, you cannot have this clear vision of the fact that Aham Brahma Asmi, I the Self am the truth. It is not simply to say the Aham Brahma Asmi. It's not simply to say this. It's a vision of the fact which should become one's own vision. Because in discovering the fact of one's own self being the truth, identity can be shifted from the anatma, non-self, to the self. Only when this identity shift happens, it's called cognitive shift. Physically, we are not doing anything. What do we do physically? Before coming to the class, we are coming here like this. After the class, we go back, like as we come. So physically nothing happens. It's a cognitive shift. The cognitive shift has to happen through the Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam of the subject matter of the Upanishads. That Aham Brahma Asmi, the truth of the entirety of the universe, is the truth of every individual. Therefore, Upanishads help us discover this amazing fact of one's own self being Brahma, the reality. So in taking ownership of one's own self being Brahma, in claiming the reality being one's own self, the cognitive shift happens that one's identity will be shifted from material body, mind sense complex to consciousness, the Atma. Even though in day-to-day transactions we will be having identity relatively, absolutely our identity will be with Atma. Only if the cognitive shift happens, identity shifted from anatma, body, mind, and complex to atma, the consciousness. The common human universal fundamental problem of sense of insecurity, sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy, sense of limitations centered on I can be resolved. Unless and until this fundamental problem of sense of smallness, sense of mortality, sense of insecurity, sense of inadequacy centered on I becomes resolved, there is no way of being free from emotional dependence. One can enjoy freedom, which is already there. One can revel in the vision of fullness of happiness. One can see the absolute peace being one's own nature only if this vision is there. Therefore, knowing the truth is actually knowing one's own essential nature. In the wake of the clear vision of one's own self being Brahma, seeing one's own self being the whole, it is an amazing perspective change. The study of the Upanishads must contribute for this perspective change, which is freedom, which is happiness, which is peace. That is why any Upanishad is said to be a Pramana Grantha, an authentic, valid means of knowledge of the truth, of one's own self. So by way of discovering the truth of one's own self, the truth of the universe becomes discovered as it were. The truth of life becomes discovered as it were. The truth of everything becomes discovered as it were. So here, in Mandukya Upanishad, specifically, the nature of the self is discussed. There are many teaching methods, traditional teaching methodology is there. And the method of unfoldment of the meaning of the mantras is called sampradaya. And the teaching methods are known as prakriyaha. The prakriyas, the method of teaching, the method of unfolding the mantras, known as prakriya, is inbuilt in the Upanishads. That we will understand as we study the Upanishads. It is not possible for one to understand the prakriya without being exposed to the study of the teaching. If you're exposed to the teaching, you will understand how the methodology is inbuilt in the teaching itself. Mainly, all Upanishads discuss many aspects as I said before. Like first, the essential nature of an individual is one aspect, an important aspect. What an individual is essentially. It's called Jiva Swarupam or Jivatma Swarupam is one aspect. Another aspect is the concept of Lord or the essential nature of the Lord. In Sanskritam, the word used is Ishwaraha. What is meant by the word Lord. What is the truth of the Lord? Who the Lord is? What the Lord is essentially? So understanding the essential nature of the Lord forms the second and another aspect called Ishvara Swarupam or Paramatma Swarupam. So Jivatma Swarupam, one aspect. Paramatma Swarupam, another aspect. If Jivatma Swarupam and Paramatma Swarupam, the essential nature of a microcosmic being and the essential nature of macrocosmic being, the Jivaha and Ishvaraha, being one and the same, can be understood, then there is great relief. So Jivatma Paramatma Swarupa Aikyam inquiry into the nature of the individual will help us with the vision of the nature of the individual. Enquiry into the nature of the Lord will help understand the essential nature of the Lord. Understanding these two aspects separately will help us understand the essential oneness of the individual and the total. Jivatma Paramatma Swarupa Aikyam. The third aspect. Another discussion is on what this material universe is. What this material universe is. Definitely, in our perception, the universe is, the objective material universe is very real. And all the Upanishads uniformly state this fact, the universe is not real. The world of objects is not as real as we think. So what this universe is? This is another aspect discussed. So Upanishads uniformly state, this universe is not real. It is not as real as we think. At the same time, it is not unreal also. It's very wrong to say the universe is unreal. And we should remember, according to the Shastram, unreal is that which does not exist at all. And for which there is a Sanskritam Shabdaha, Tucham. Tucham. I won't remind you of the examples. Rabbit's horn. I will not say more than this. So the universe is not unreal at all. If it is neither real nor unreal, it must, what is it then? for which there's a special word used in the Shastram, a technical expression, mithya. Mithya cannot be translated into English, but still we can say as though real, seemingly real, apparently real. The universe is seemingly real. It is not absolutely real. Because the universe is available for our transaction, experience, enjoyment, because we are here as part of the world. That is why we say it is mithya. And here the reality of the universe which we do not know, which we try to understand through the study of the Upanishad, is satyam. So different aspects are discussed in the Shastra. And also, the way of life is also discussed in the Shastra. Certain way of life. This is the way of life which should be followed. If this way of life is followed, what will be the benefit? If the way of life is not followed, what will be the consequence? The beauty of the Veda Shastram is that it does not say you should follow this way of life, but beautifully it says, if you follow this way of life, this is the benefit. If you do not follow this way of life, this will be the consequence. Once we understand, oh, what is the benefit of following this way of life? What is the consequence of not following this way of life? Once you understand, we will be supposed to be prudent, intelligent enough to decide whether we should follow the way of life or not. Why the Upanishads or why the Shastram, Vedanta Shastram, emphasizes such a way of life? Because unless and until we follow this way of life, there is no way of becoming disciplined. It's very important for us to become disciplined adequately mentally. In order to be emotionally stable, intellectually sharp. To understand and assimilate the teaching. Thereby you can enjoy the benefit of the study of the Upanishads. You can enjoy the benefit of the attainment of knowledge. So it is said, this way of life is said to be Karma Yoga. Which is itself a discipline. So the two main disciplines in the entire Shastram, one is the discipline of Karma Yoga, which should be initially followed strictly by a spiritual aspirant. In order to become adequately qualified, eligible for the attainment of jnana. And another discipline is jnana yoga, which should be sequentially followed for the attainment of jnanam, knowledge. These two disciplines. One discipline is for the mental preparation. Another discipline is for the attainment of knowledge. And attainment of knowledge itself is attainment of freedom. Even though it is very clearly taught that freedom is not something to be attained, happiness is not something to be attained, freedom or happiness or peace is not something to be attained, it is taking ownership of what is already there. This jnanam only helps us take ownership of the happiness which is already there. Therefore, knowledge itself is freedom. Knowledge itself is happiness. They're identical. Even though we use the term attainment of happiness. So attainment of happiness is nothing but attainment of knowledge of the truth of the universe obtaining as one's own self. So these are all the different aspects discussed in the Shastra. If all the topics are discussed, it becomes a shastra, complete shastra. So prakarana grantaha, a Vedantic manual, a treatise, need not discuss all these topics, all these aspects of the shastra. Any Vedantic manual can pick up one or two aspects of the Shastra and elaborately discuss the topic so that it can throw light on that particular aspect. So we do study many Prakarana Granthas for our enhancement of clarity of these different aspects discussed in the Shastra. And here Mandukya Prakranam, the Karikas, 215 Karikas of Gaudapada Acharya, form one text. So it is reviewed as a Prakrana Grantaha. Mandukya, Karikas together form a text of a Prakrana Grantaha. Why? Because specifically it discusses the Jivatma Swarupam, thereby it helps us understand Jivatma Paramatma Swarupa Aikya, essential oneness of the individual and the total. there's also an important prakriya. There are many prakriyas used in the Shastram to help us arrive at the truth, understand the truth. Drik Drishyaveka Prakriya, Avasthatraya Prakriya, Panchakosha Prakriya, Karyakarana Prakriya, Adhyarupavada Prakriya. The prakriyas are there. And here, Avasthatraya Prakriya. Avasthatraya Prakriya. Prakriya is the method. The method of analyzing the three states of experience, thereby arriving at the truth of one's own self, is Avasthatraya Prakriya. And that prakriya is very actually inbuilt in this Mandukya Upanishad. Of course, there is also Karanakarya Prakriya. That's also there. And specifically, these two aspects are discussed. Jivatma, Swarupam, thereby Jivatma, Paramatma, Swarupa, Aikyam. It made very clear in this. The whole textbook of Karika is looked upon as a Prakarana Grantaha. And Shankara Bhagavatpada, as expression of his tremendous reverence for his Acharya's Acharya, taking the whole thing as one book of Prakarana Grantaha, including the mantras, states that he would be writing the commentary on Mandukya Prakarana Grantaha. When he states, Shankara Bhagavatpada states Mandukya Prakarana Grantaha, what he means is he includes the original 12 mantras of Vedanta Shastra also. So he presents he writes commentary on four Prakaranani. Prakaranam in this context can be translated as a chapter. So Mandukya Prakarana Adhyayanam, study of the Mandukya Prakaranam, means studying the four Prakaranani, four chapters. So Prathamam Prakaranam, the first chapter or first Prakaranam, is known as Agama Prakaranam. Agama Prakaranam. Why the first chapter is known as Agama Prakaranam? The first chapter consists of 12 mantras of the Upanishad, the original text, and 29 karikas of Gaudapada Acharya. And Agamaha means Vedaha. So 12 mantras of Vedanta Shastram form the part of the first chapter, the Agama portion of the first chapter. First chapter is in the Agama portion of 12 mantras. Therefore, the first chapter is called Agama Prakranam. And apart from these 29 karikas of first chapter, you can know of the 215 karikas, 36 karikas from the second chapter, which is known as Vaitathya Prakaranam. Vaitathyam means it's a noun word. Vaitathyam means mithyatvam. So the second chapter establishes the fact of the universe, the objective material world being not real. So mithya means that which is as the real. The universe is mithya. It is not real. It is as the real. Vitatha means mithya. Vaitathyam, mithyatvam, noun. So this material universe having the status of being not real is mithyatvam. Mithyatvam, you want to cut, exactly you want to translate it. The universe having the status of not being real. The universe enjoying the status of being as though real is said to be mithyatvam or vaitathyam. The whole second chapter specifically dedicated for establishing this fact. Because understanding the mithyatvam of the universe is as important as understanding the satyatvam of the Atma. It's very important to understand the Atma is absolutely real. So also it's very important to understand this the objective material universe is mithya. It is for our own clarity. The topic is discussed in the second chapter. Therefore, the second chapter is known as Vaitathya Prakranam. So the third chapter has the title of Advaita Prakranam. Once the universe being mithya, the material world being mithya is made very clear, then establishing the non-duality of the reality becomes easier. In fact, reality is non-dual. Reality is non-dual. There is no second reality. There is no second thing other than the reality. two things, okay? There's a second reality. There's a second thing other than the reality. All that is here is absolutely only the reality. In Vedanta Shastram, it is not said reality is one. Reality is one means that what else is there? Therefore, instead of saying one, number one should change into adverb, okay? What is there is only the reality. This is a fact about the reality, and this fact has to be clarified, established. So Advaita Prakaranam, the third chapter, discusses and discusses the nature of the reality, establishes the non-duality of the reality. Then we have the fourth chapter called Alata Shanti Prakaranam. Alata Shanti Prakaranam. Alataha means firebrand. A firebrand means definitely it must have, firebrand must have a glowing tip. Glowing, blazing tip. Using the example of firebrand, Gaudapada Acharya refutes the views of different schools of thought. Of course, there are thinkers, there have been thinkers, there were thinkers. All of them are given to their own speculations and thinking. They all have come out with their own different contentions and views on what is stating, what is truth. Especially some thinkers who hold on to only the reasoning as the means of knowledge. When they present their views, they have their own limitations. So the fallacies in their thinking, the logical loopholes in their views have to be pointed out and they must be refuted. So refuting, the refute is others' views is not to undermine or disrespect others. It is for not compromising with the fact. It is for one's own clarity of vision. So Alataha, this firebrand, having this glowing tip, is just one. We can use Alata, firebrand, moving our hand in many ways, we can create countless number of designs and patterns. Very enjoyable for children. Oh, look at it, you can write A, you can do B, you can do C, like this. Designs and patterns. But really speaking, are all those patterns real? When you see those patterns, they seem to be real. You stop the movement of your hand. All those patterns and designs resolve in this one glowing tip, the firebrand. They're not real. With reference to this countless number of patterns, glowing tip is the only reality. Is all just the patterns are based on the movement of the firebrand. So it's simply all other views, how the patterns will resolve in the tip glowing to be firebrand. All these different views also can be resolved in the wake of division of non-duality of the reality. How the different designs and patterns are not real. So also all these views and contentions of different systems of philosophy are also not really fact revealing, are not meaningful. This is made very clear in the fourth chapter. If it's called Alatha Shanti Prakaranam. Like this, we are going to study these prakaranas. Mandukya Prakarana Granthaha. We started seeing last year. We're going to continue from where we left. Just as being the first class, I want to remind you, bring you back to the class. Of course, you're all always in the class only. For me to think that you're all where I left, isn't it? I never like to do half and go. But something helpless situation that we had to do like this to come back to the class. It's all right? Okay. And let us today see the first two dhyana shlokas, the Mangalacharana shlokas. Even though we've already seen this, better to do this Mangalacharanam, Ravasa Namaskarams too. Bhagavan and begin. Again, the text is Adi Shankara Bhagavatpada begins his commentary on Mandukya Prakarana Grantha, invoking the grace of Bhagavan. Even though we say these verses are benedictory verses, he invokes the grace of Bhagavan. Really speaking, in these two verses, he again presents the essence of the Vedantic teaching only. It's very important in the tradition for an author to begin his writings to begin with the prayer, a benedictory verse, where he genuinely invokes the grace. If a book is begun with the prayer, it is said it is not worth reading that book, even if the book presents amazing fact. So, why any author begins his work with the invocation in the Mangalacharanam shloka or mantra? It's very important to be able to complete the text. Everything had written on palm leaves. So the author must be healthy enough mentally and physically to be able to complete the textbook which he wanted to write. He must be able to complete by people who do not believe in the teaching. And many people should benefit from reading that book. So, considering all these facts in mind, one seeks the grace. Therefore, the book must be begun in the tradition wherein an author invokes the grace of the Lord for successful completion of the work. Apart from the general prayer mantras we have, even the Upanishad is begun with the Shanti Patha, Shanti Mantra. Yesterday we saw the meaning. So here, Shankara Bhagavatpada writes his own Mangala Charana Shloka, the very beginning. Let us read it now, read this, those first two verses.
Bhuktva bhogan sthavishtan punarapi dhishanod bhasitan kamajanyan pitva sarvan viseshan swapiti madhurabhum Mayaya bhojayanno maya sankhyaturiyam paramamrutamajam brahmayatthannatosmi prajnanam shupratanai sthiracharanikara vyapibhirvyapyalokan bhok Tva bhogan sthavishtan punarapi dhishanod bhasitan kamajanyan pitva sarvan viseshan swapiti madhurabhum mayaya bhojayanno maya sankhyaturiyam paramamrutamajam brahmayat Tannatosmi.
Yat Brahma Tat Nataha Asmi. We see the last Brahma. See the word Brahma. Brahma Yat Tat Nataha Asmi. Nataha Asmi. You'll just begin from there. Nataha asmi. Asmi, I remain. Nataha, having bowed. I remain having bowed. I remain as the one was bowed. Literal, exact translation. I remain as the one who has bowed. Means I remain bowing. Nataha asmi. I remain as the one who is bowed to that which is Brahma, absolute reality of the whole. What is the absolute reality of the whole? He explains, the reality which is available for recognition only as the experiencer. The reality of the whole is available for recognition only as the knower experiencer. Subject of knowledge. So what does it mean? Reality should not be searched for as an object at all. As long as we search for the reality as an object, our search will be endless. Search will never come to an end. Because reality is not an object. If it is not an object, means we understand it cannot be understood through any means of knowledge. It cannot be perceived. It cannot be conceived mentally. It cannot be described also. Words cannot describe. Mind cannot conceive. Sense organs cannot perceive. Because reality is not an object. It is never available for objectification. And the reality is available for recognition only as the truth, the nature of the knower, experiencer, the subject of knowledge. We all go through three states of experience. Of course, in the waking state, the object experienced is this gross universe. There's a world experienced in the waking state, which is different from what is experienced in the dream. Of course, there's an experience in deep sleep state also. There are only three states of experience. There is no fourth state of experience. So waking state, Jagrat Avastha, dream state, Swapna Avastha, deep sleep state, Sushupti Avastha. There is no fourth state. This is repeated. Even though we do not dream every day, still if at all we can talk about another state of experience apart from our deep sleep state and waking state, that is dream state of experience. So three states of experience are there. But the experiencer obtaining in all these three states of experience is one and the same. Not only in one mind, in all the minds. So many human beings are there. So many minds are there. In every human mind, there is an experience of three states of the mind. There is experience of three states of mind, which are three states of experience. In all the minds also, not only in one's own mind, the experience they're obtaining in all three states of experience is one and the same. There's only experience obtaining in all the minds also. The experiencer is one. there is no second experiencer knower at all. It must be become very clear, because having come to Mandukya means only it must be very clear. And who is that experiencer? That experiencer is of the nature of knowing. The experiencer is abstract, formless reality. The experiencer is abstract, formless reality. That is reality. They don't move at all. We can say very clearly, in this whole hall, there's only illuminator. The illuminator is one. How many illuminators are here? Illuminator is one. Illumined, opaque things are many. Many, many things. Many colors. Illuminator is one, that is light. Similarly, with reference to the three states of experience, the experiencer is one. And that experiencer is abstract, formless reality, subtlest reality. How subtle it is? When we stumble upon, you'll understand. The subtleness cannot be described. Subtleness is something to be understood again. Why does the reality know? Why does the reality experience? Experiencing, knowing, being conscious, being aware is the nature of the reality. Being aware is not an action. Being conscious is not an action. Know why I'm telling all these things? Just to say that I'm preparing already to enter the teaching. Being aware is an action, swarupam, nature. Being conscious is nature. Knowing is the nature, swarupam. If you ask the question, what do you mean by saying nature? Here is the light. Light illumines the opaque things. Simple sentence. Light illumines the opaque things. They say light illumines. This verb illumines, does it denote an action or does it denote the swarupam, nature? Illumining is an action or the nature? Does the light do any, let make any effort? Does the light decide, let me illumine? Then the will is used. No. Light is, by its mere presence, it illumines. Even though I use the term illumines, which is a verb, when we hear the verb, we always think of an action. No, any verb denotes an action. The simple English grammar class we have understood. Verb should denote an action. That's how we picked up the language. Grammatically correct. Verb should denote an action. But here, with reference to light, illumines, the verb does not denote an action. It is a verb, but it does not denote an action. It denotes, it refers to the nature, What should the light do? What should the light do to illumine these things? Light need not do anything. The presence itself illuminating. Therefore, it is what? Nature, Swarupam. Similarly, when you say there is abstract reality, formless reality, inexplicably subtlest reality, that reality is of the nature of being conscious, being aware, is really of the nature of knowing. Therefore, reality is not the knower. Reality is not the knower. But from the standpoint, the known knower qualification is attributed to the reality. Like what? From the standpoint of the light, light is not the illuminator. Why? Illumining is not an action. Illumining is not an action, it's the nature. Similarly, knowing is not an action on the part of the reality. Knowing is the nature of the reality. That is why the reality is implied by the term in terms of its nature only. We use the term consciousness, awareness, knowledge. We add an adjective, pure, just to pure knowledge, pure awareness, pure consciousness. These are the terms used. Every term used, no, reveals reality in terms of its nature only. Consciousness, pure awareness, pure consciousness, pure knowledge. The words used only in terms of its nature of knowing. Okay? So here the reality is of the nature of knowing. Reality is not the knower, but because of its nature of knowing, by its mere presence it knows. Therefore, from the standpoint of the knowledge or the experience, we say what? The knower is the reality. Experience is the reality. The experiencer is reality, and the reality, the experience of reality alone is implied by the term Brahma. Experiencer reality, the knower reality, is implied by the term Brahma. So the reality, because of the presence of which the experience is possible. Is so what does the reality do? It is said here, I remain as the one as bowed to the reality, I remain bowing to the reality Brahma. What does it do? Prajnana amshu pratanaihi sthira chara nikara vyapi bhihi lokan vyapya stavishtan bhogan bhuktva. So first two lines we can say discuss the waking state experience. So bhuktva, it is this Brahma obtaining as the experiencer in the waking state enjoys, experiences the gross objects. Sthavishthan bhogan. Sthavishthan bhogan means sthula. No? Because sthavishtha means grossest. Grossest objects. Experiences, enjoys. Brahma, Brahman alone. Enjoys experiences. The grossest objects in the waking state. Sthavishtan bhogan bhuktva means Brahman, the subtlest reality implied by the term Brahman, enjoys, experiences the grossest objects. When I say enjoys experiences, the verb should not be mistaken for an action understood as a swarup. Okay. Savishtan bhogan bhuktva means it experiences, enjoys the grossest objects. How does it experience, enjoy the grossest objects? Lokan vyapya, pervading all the worlds. Doing by what? Just by merely being present. Lokan vyapya, pervading all the worlds. How does it experience again? Prajnana amshu pratanaihi. Prajnanam is a beautiful word implying the abstract formless reality which is of the nature of knowing. Prajnanam means the reality which is of the nature of consciousness. Prajnanam itself means consciousness. Pure knowledge or pure consciousness or pure awareness is meant by the term prajnanam. So what is prajnanam? Prakarshena janati iti prajnanam. Does not need to do anything to see, know. Without effortlessly, by its very nature, the reality knows. Again, can we say prajnanam is a word denoting the reality? Prajnanam is the word which reveals the reality in terms of its nature of knowing. Because we do not know what exactly is the reality is. So what is the word prajnanam? If you simply translate prajnanam, pure consciousness. Prajnanam, pure awareness. No, I'm not simply translating. Prajnanam is a word which reveals the reality, the abstract, formless reality, inexplicable reality, in terms of its nature of knowing, in terms of its nature of being conscious. Listen. So, prajnana. Amshu, amshu means ray. So prajnana amshu means ray of consciousness. Ray of the light of consciousness. Prajnana amshu. Prajnana amshu pratanaihi. Prajnana amshu pratanaihi. Through the rays of light of consciousness, Prajnanamsha Pratanehi. Pervading all the worlds. Worlds of what? Worlds of beings. What are the beings here? Sthira. Sthira means firm, unmoving. Chara means moving. So, unmoving, moving. Immobile, mobile beings. The world is constituted of sthira, chara, nikara. Nikara means hosts. Hosts of countless number of beings. Mobile and immobile beings. Living, non-living. Animate, inanimate beings. Mobile, immobile beings. All living beings which are mobile. There are living beings which are immobile also, like plants, etc. Of course, the non-inanimate beings also. Everything, the world of animate, inanimate, mobile and immobile, living and non-living things are meant by the expression sthira, chara, nikara. Nikara means countless hosts of beings, mobile, immobile beings. Sthira, chara, nikara. Vyapi bhihi. So pervading the rays of consciousness, pervading all the worlds, pervading all the worlds of beings, of mobile, immobile, living and non-living things. Stavishtan bhogan bhuktva. Having enjoyed the grossest objects in the waking state, the same experiencer continues to be there in the dream state also. As the experiencer of subtle thought-produced objects. Said what now? Punaha api, again. Why again? It's not, doesn't happen one day. Punaha means again. Again and again and again and again and again and again. Day after day after day. This reality is there always. Always reality is there as experiencer. Experiencing the grossest objects in the waking state. Pervading all the worlds. The rays of consciousness. Enjoying the grossed objects. Continues to be there as the experiencer. Thereby, again, it engulfs. Okay. Engulfing means what? Enjoys again, experiences. The subtle world of subtle objects, thought produced subtle objects. So it is said, Dishana Udbhasitan Kamajanyan. Dishana Udbhasitan Kamajanyan. Dishana means mind. Dishana Udbhasitan. Udbhasita means the objects which are not the elemental objects. Which are projected by, which are brought to light by the mind. They are brought to light in the mind. Okay? Dream world of objects, where do you see? In your mind or outside? Because Dishana means mind. Dishana Udbhasitan Kamajanyan Pitva. Same experiencer. Experiences all the subtle objects. Why are called subtle? They're not elemental, gross. They're thought projected, thought produced. objects. Dishna udbhasitan kamajanyan. Experiences. So here you have to remember, objects experienced in the dream are actually the objects which remain in subtle thought form in our subconscious mind. And what are those objects obtaining in a subconscious mind in subtle thought forms? All those are nothing but the vasanas. What is vasana? Any object obtaining in subtle thought form, much subtler thought form, in subconscious mind is said to be vasana. It is not perceptible through sense organs. It's not elemental. But still it's an object. See, whatever we experience in the waking state again becomes stored in our subconscious in subtle thought form, known as vasana. Much subtler thought form. So whatever we have in our subconscious mind, stored in our subconscious mind, in much subtler thought forms as vasanas, is nothing but the objects which we experienced in the waking state only. And also, some unfulfilled desires also remain in subtle thought form in our minds. When desires do not get fulfilled, those unfulfilled desires also will remain in subtle form in the subconscious mind. So all these vasanas, these much, much subtler thought forms of the already experienced objects, unfulfilled desires, which remains mind alone, become replayed, and there forms a subtle world of objects. Again, you are there as what? An experiencer. You are there as an individual. You see the world, external world. There's also experiencer. And that experiencer obtaining in the dream world also is the same experiencer. The object of experience changes. Completely the gross world disappears. And the experience of the subtle world of objects. So it is said, Dishana udbhasitan kamajanyan pibati. That line states the experiencer being the only experience of the dream world. So, Dishana udbhasitan kamajanyan sarvan viseshan kamajanyan pitva. That one line stands for dream experience. Prajnanam shupratanai sthiracharanikara vyapibharvyapya lokan bhuktva bhogan stavishtan. Until then, lines, this refers to the waking state experience. Punarapidishanodbhasitan kamajanyan pitva. Until pitva refers to the dream state. Sarvan viseshan swap. Swapiti madhurabhung sarvan viseshan pitva. Okay, until then we have sentence refers to dream state. Having experienced the grossest world of objects, the world of grossest objects, the waking state, then again having experienced, engulfed the world of subtle objects projected in the mind, then Swapiti sleeps. Who is sleeping here? Madhurabhung. See, beautifully, the experiencer obtaining in the deep sleep state is given a beautiful title here as Madhurabhung. Madhura book. Madhura book means what? Experiencer of the sweetness. We only say have sweet dreams, no? But here not sweet dreams. Dreams are sweet or not. We say sweet. At least we say, okay? For want of saying good words. But here, Atma, here the experiencer is said to be Madhura Bhung. Madhuram means sweet. So what is what? Sweet is desirable, isn't it? Sweet is desirable. So what is desirable is meant by the word sweetness here. What is desirable for all of us? Happiness. Bliss. Isn't it? Sorrowlessness. Okay? Sorrowlessness is desirable for all of us. Sweet is desirable for all of us. Even though people are so conscious of not eating sweets nowadays, still sweet is always sweet is said to be what now? Desirable. As sweet is desirable, and what is most desirable, universally desirable, is happiness. What is happiness? Sorrowlessness. Isn't it? Sorrowlessness. Universally desirable, you know. Happiness is something which is desirable for all the people of all times, of all places, of all cultures. That's why happiness is the universal end. But here, so happiness is meant by the word madharam. Here actually not even happiness, I can say bliss. Okay? A little different between happiness and bliss, because I've already told many times, still I'll tell. So book means experiencer, enjoyer, eater, consumer. The word book, book, not English book, okay? Here, book, Sanskritam book means experiencer, enjoyer, consumer, eater. Okay, here, experiencer of bliss. The word madhuram stands for, the word madhura stands for universally desirable bliss, sorrowlessness. And the same experiencer continues to be there in deep sleep state as the experiencer of the bliss. Okay, now you have to understand, in deep sleep state, are you there or not? You are there as an experiencer. And what do you experience in deep sleep state? There's no experience of the grossest objects. There's no experience of the subtle objects projected by thought forms. Okay, projected by thoughts. There's neither dream world nor deep waking world. Then what is experienced is what? Absence of the worlds. Worlds are not absent, but the experience is of the absence of the world. Worlds do not become absent, okay? Worlds do exist. There is experience of the experiencelessness of the worlds. There's experience is there. Experience of what? Experiencelessness of worlds, which means the blankness of mind. Blankness. Mind is completely blank. Total blankness of mind is the experience. The total blankness of mind is the experience of the experiencelessness. No experience is there. That is experienced. And when there's blankness of mind, when there is blankness of mind experienced, definitely there is what? Then there is bliss. The experience of something is there, there will be pairs of opposites. As likes and dislikes. There'll be hatred. There'll be anger. Then nothing is possible. No desire. No There's no experience of desire. There's no experience of like strong likes and dislikes. There's no experience of pain. There's no experience of pleasure. This itself is what? Bliss. That is the secret why we all love sleep. Sometimes we kill our sleep. Sometimes people who have a bad habit of killing the sleep and watching television and all that. That's a different problem. But really speaking, sleep is sukham. Now you know why any child gets cranky when you wake up the child from sleep. Okay? I suppose sleep gets disturbed, even elders get cranky. And what about, what is it? Is it? Because sleep is, in the sleep there is sukham. Bliss. There's no experience, no pain. No experience of objects, no pain. And when you wake up from sleep, we always recollect your past experience. I slept very well. I slept like a log of wood. I did not know anything. I did not know anything. It's very important. I did not know anything. I did not know where I was. I did not know anything means what is experienced is what? Total ignorance. Total ignorance is object of experience. You do not know you are in sleep. You do not know the world exists in sleep. You do not know your own existence. You do not know the existence of the world in sleep. Is not knowing one's own existence, thereby not knowing the existence of the world, is total ignorance. Ignorance of the existence of one's own self and the ignorance of the existence of the world is equal to total ignorance. Total ignorance is experienced or not? Yes, there's experience of total ignorance. But you have to wake up. You should know you are to recollect the experience of total ignorance. Understand? And whenever there's total ignorance, experience of total ignorance, there is experience of bliss. Sorrowlessness. Painlessness, which is comfort, which is sukham. Okay? So, in total ignorance, there is bliss. So, what is bliss? Total ignorance is bliss. Oh, let us try to sleep the whole day, morning till evening. Let us not get up at all. Take melatonin. Hundreds of melatonin. Don't need to wake up. Bliss, 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 bliss. No, we are not interested in bliss at all. We are interested in happiness. Okay? Total knowledge is happiness. Total ignorance is bliss. So we not work hard to have bliss. We have to fall asleep to experience bliss, but for total happiness, you have to know. So, okay, let me not go. So, Madhura Bhung means here, experiencer of bliss, total ignorance, is also the same experiencer. The one and the only experiencer is there, enjoying experience the grossest objects in the waking state, pervading all the worlds of all the beings, of mobile immobile beings. Same experience is there in the dream state, experiencing the thought-produced subtle objects, remaining in the form of vasanas in subconscious mind. And the same experiencer continues to be there, experiencing the blankness of mind. experience. Okay. Whose presence makes the experience possible. Mayaya naha bhojayan. Now, all of us say, I'm experiencer, isn't it? Now, we all enjoy the status of being experiencer because of the presence, blessing of this abstract reality, Brahma. Naha bhojayan. Making us enjoy the status of being experiencer. Listen. Making us experience enjoying the object is there. The Brahman alone is there as the experiencer in deep sleep state also. Making the experience possible by its mere presence. That Brahma is like the fourth state. As if there's a fourth state of experience. As if there's a fourth person. Brahman is not the fourth person. Brahman is not the fourth experiencer. Understand? Brahman is not the fourth state of experience also. Brahman is the very truth of the experiencer, only experiencer obtaining in all three states of experience. Now, the same experiencer is given three different names. The experiencer is abstract, formless reality implied by the term Brahman alone is there as experiencer. Even though he is not the experiencer is Brahma. The experiencer obtaining in the waking state is known as Vishva. Experience is the same. Experienced world of objects is different. Therefore, experiencer obtaining in the waking state is called Vishva. The same experiencer experiencing the world, subtle dream world of objects, is said to be Taijasaha. The same experiencer obtaining in deep sleep state is said to be Prajnaha. So are there three experiences? No. Three different qualifications are attributed to the only experiencer in keeping with the difference in the objects of experience. Vishvaha, Taijasaha, Prajnaha. The same experiencer continues to be there in all three states of experience, making the experience possible, lending existence to the experienced world of objects. Now, this experiencer is distinct. Distinct, not distant from the objects of experience. Not distinct from the mind. The state of experience is a state of mind. Please understand. State of experience is a state of mind. What is the distance between the experiencer and the experience? The state of mind. Experience itself is experienced. Understand? What is the distance? There's no distance. But distinct. Experience is distinct. The experiencer is not the experience. Understand? But the experience is the experiencer. Got it? Therefore, the experiencer is, on waking up from sleep, you can say, I was there in deep sleep state. When you fall asleep, you know you are there or not. Tell me, you're there or not? You are very much there in deep sleep state. How are you in deep sleep state? As experiencer. But you are there in deep sleep state as experiencer, not knowing you are the experiencer. Not knowing you are the experiencer, you are there as the experiencer. Not knowing your existence, you are there in deep sleep state. Understand? So you are the experiencer. Very clear, isn't it? Now here Shastram says that experiencer is Brahma. Experiencer is the reality. How do you understand now? There's something which is present, because of whose presence the deep sleep should experience is possible. You say, when you wake up from sleep, what do you say? I know, I did not know. I know now that I did not know that I was in sleep. I know now very well, no doubt, that I did not know there was world. I did not know I was. I know now, therefore was, I was there also. Now I know that I did not know that I was. Now I know that I did not know the world was, therefore I was there. Not knowing my own existence. Okay, what is I then? My God. I is experiencer. Understand? I, the self, am the experiencer. The experiencer, Shastram says, experiencer is Brahma. The abstract, formless reality that knower is Brahma. That which is there, what is the form of that which is there, knowing the deep sleep state? What is the form? You all know very well. What is the form of that? Formless. How subtle it is? You can't explain. Okay, formless, subtle, subtle. You understand how subtle it is. There is something. Because of the presence of which experience is possible, that something is Brahma. That Brahma, that abstract, formless, subtlest reality, because of whose presence experience is possible, is implied with the term Brahma. Therefore, what? You are that Brahma. Understand? The Brahma. So, already this mantra says what now? The swarupam of every individual obtaining as experiencer is what? Brahma. The reality implied with term Brahman alone is there as the experiencer in every mind, in all three states of mind. There's never a time the experiencer is not. There are only three states of experience, means what? The experience is always there. Experience does not go anywhere. Experiencer does not sleep. Understand? Experiencer does not sleep. The experiencer is there always. In all three states of experience, knowing the experiences. Tell me, which is the time when Brahman is not? It's always. Knowing your existence, you are there in the waking state. Not knowing your existence, you are there in deep sleep state. You are there always. And you are that Brahma. You, the knower, experiencer, are Brahma. Okay, and that, what that Brahma, we say what now? Why that Brahma? The truth of the whole universe. Look at the reality, the truth of the whole universe. You say that, tad Brahma. And look at the reality, the truth of the entire universe. You say, use the pronoun that. That Brahman is there here as the nearest self. Experiencer obtaining in every mind of every individual in all three states of experience. The only experiencer, knower, observer, obtaining in all three states of experience in all the minds of all the human beings always is Brahma. Yet Brahma tat nataha asmi. I remain bowing to that absolute reality of the universe implied by the term Brahma, which alone is there as experiencer, unchanging experiencer in all the changing states of mind, changing states of experience. Unchanging, changeless experiencer, obtaining in all the changing states of mind, changing states of experience. I remain bowing to that reality. Already, you see yourself being non-separate. What is the difference between the light illumining, the one substance called light, illuminator of this mic is the light. One illuminator of this maroon color is the light. Illuminator of this is light. How many illuminators are there? The only illuminator is light. Only light. So also, the experiencer, knower, obtaining in all three states of experience, in all the minds, is the only abstract, formless reality, which is of the nature of consciousness, a pure knowledge, thereby implied by the term Brahma. I remain bowing to that Brahma. The question comes, how can I, if aham Brahma asmi, if I the self am Brahma, how can I bow to myself? If I had to bow to, then there was something, somebody must be there in front of me. Somebody other than myself I can bow to. We need an altar to bow to. I can always bow to elders, gurus, mahatmas, Bhagavan's altar. So what I bow to must be different from I, the one who is bowing. How can I bow to myself? Absolutely, it's very clear. I, the experiencer, am different from the experienced world of objects, including my body, mind, sense complex. The verse makes very clear there's only experiencer. The experiencer is abstract, formless reality, implied with the term Brahma. And I the experiencer, am Brahma. How can I bow to Brahma? Here, Shastram says, bowing to one's own self, bowing to Brahma, bowing to one's own self, means seeing the fact that I, the self, am Brahma. In seeing one's own self being Brahma, self being Brahma, the absolute formless reality, one resolves one's I sense in Brahma. In seeing one's own self being Brahma, one resolves one's I sense in Brahma, the abstract reality. It is cognitive resolution of eyesense in consciousness. Abstract reality, consciousness. If we use the term Brahma, it's something. Consciousness, we say, you can understand subtleness. Where can you resolve the wave? When you say, what is wave? What choice you have, say, you have, other than saying, wave is water. When you say, wave is water, nothing but water, you're so clear, wave is water. Wave is water. In saying the statement, you are not physically doing anything. Cognitively, you are resolving that form and name wave in the water. And resolving this wave in water is what? Offering wave to the water. Understand? Similarly, when you say, aham Brahma asmi, And I remain bowing to Brahman means, I bow to Brahman means, I resolve my identity. The essence becomes resolved in Brahman. Resolving essence in Brahman is what? Resolving one's ahankara. And resolving one's ahankara in Brahman is ahankara nasha, which is in the Shastra's language, the greatest offering. There's no greater offering than offering yourself to the Lord. You offer so many things, coconut, banana, varieties of cookies. Offering one's own self to Brahma. You cannot physically offer. Cognitive offering of one's own self to Brahma is nothing but seeing the fact of one's own self being non-separate from Brahma. One's own self being Brahma. This is all said to be absolute surrender. There's no way of absolutely surrendering oneself to the total or Brahma or Ishvara other than seeing the fact of one's own self being the truth of the whole. I thought of finishing two verses today, but I could not, because the problem with me is I never come prepared to the class. Why I'm saying this, I don't believe in that. Only thoroughly come and spontaneously speak. Not that I don't prepare, the sense, preparation sense, not the planning. Because I just, the flow comes to me. As it comes, I speak.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
I will explain one word here, Maya Sankhya Turiyam. Do it next class.